Welcome to class today. Before we begin, any comments, questions, or other things for me? Yes? Do you get to see what you missed on your test? Yes, you do. Except that right now the server that's supposed to be doing that is having some trouble. I hope that will be fixed this afternoon. I would be shocked if it takes longer than tomorrow midday. Other questions? Yes? What was the average for the test? Good question. Let's go to the announcements on Colab. And let's click on the test 1 grades and regrades. And we can see that the mean was 85.01, the median was 87.5, the mode was 97, and three people had perfect scores. Any other questions? All right, while I'm here, let's talk about this announcement. So if you go to Colab, there's an announcement about grades. And grades are posted on Colab. You can get to them. It says test grades. That'll give you grade per page breakdown. It will have a link for TPEGS, which is not currently working, so you cannot currently look at your exam, but hopefully it'll be fixed by tomorrow. When you look at the exam page, there'll be numbers printed on it in red ink. Those numbers are somewhat correlated to your grade, but not in any obvious way. There is a key, and the resources on Colab will go over that key towards the end of lecture today, talk about why the answers were what they were. And then there's some information about regrades, which won't make sense until TPEGS is around. But once you go to TPEGS, it's a tool that lets you look at your exam and then say, I think you graded me incorrectly according to the key. There are some guidelines here for regrades, right? Only ask for a regrade if you got it right. Or your grade does not match the key, and be succinct in that. And is your hand in the air, or are you just getting... Okay.
How many people got a 97?
How many people got a 97? More than any other score.
You know, like, how much of a margin? Was it, like, a huge
move? I don't think it was very large. I don't know. If it was very large, then the difference between the median and the mean would be a lot larger. But I didn't actually count it. I just asked my database, what was the mode? And it told me. So that's up there. You can go look at your grades now. Hopefully very soon you'll be able to look at your tests, and we'll take it from there. It's worth noting we have a regrade system in part because with 600 exams, we do make mistakes. That might be you. Don't feel embarrassed if we made a mistake. Just ask us to fix it, and we'll fix it. Other announcements. I've been asked to remind people that if you are a School of Engineering student, you can apply for a CS minor, unless you're cooler and want to be a CS major. The CS minor deadline is March 1st. That's coming up soon. There's a link to that and so on in the lecture notes. Also, homework 4 has been posted. Okay? So let me give a brief overview of homework 4. And then we'll talk about some of the pieces you need to do with it today. So homework 4, like the others, has 5 programs. Each of them is based on reading a CSV document. We'll talk about how to read CSV documents off of a particular website. Okay, there's a couple links there. And then doing things with it. So why is this all about reading data and doing stuff with it? Well, those of you that don't go on to do computing for your life, one of the things you'll probably still use what you've learned in this course to do is to analyze data. It's one of the most common things you want to do is get a lot of data and answer questions about it. So we have an entire homework devoted just to answering questions about databases. We're going to use the same one for the whole thing. It is the enrollment data for the University of Virginia, as compiled with cooperation with Lou Bloomfield in physics and Mark Sheriff in computer science. And we're just going to answer questions like, given 2 departments, which one has more students? Pretty straightforward. We will also answer questions like, what is the average duration of a class in a particular department? And you can find out fun things like, in computer science, we have an average of 107 minutes per class, where English has an average of 71, and ECE, electrical computer engineering, has 163, and so on. You can explore that and see how long classes are in different departments. You will write one that will find which classes overlap with a particular moment in time. So you could see, for example, that at 1:04 in the afternoon, there are a lot of CS classes meeting. Whereas if you look, for example, at 7:12 a.m., systems has pretty much no classes. Actually, no classes at all meeting. Okay? So you'll learn how to figure out that. Hours open. You will get to figure out when are the first and last classes, as recorded in SIS. Apparently there are classes that aren't there, but in general, how early do you have to get up if this is your major? And you can see fun things like, in CS we have classes start 8 or 9 every day. But in certain other departments, we have classes that start much later. For example, in SIS, BME has no classes that begin earlier than 3:30 in the afternoon on Mondays. I'm told by some BME majors that there must be some that are missing. But nonetheless, that's what SIS says. You will also get to compute the student-professor ratio for a given department. How many students are there? How many professors are there? What's the ratio there? And learn wonderful things like, for example, in computer science, we have over 1,000 students per professor, where in other departments it's quite a bit lower. The smallest I've found so far is drama, so if you really want a lot of interaction with your professors, go to the drama department. Okay, but you can find out this information as well. So the idea here is just sort of to play around with data, to learn to compute various things with it, using some of the file and array stuff we've done lately in the CSV. So, the main topic for today is how we do that. Before we get to how we do that, questions about the homework in general? Okay. So let's go to one of the examples that's on the lecture notes for today. Before we do that, actually, let's go to look at an example file. So what is a CSV file? A CSV file looks like this. Okay? It is a text file, just sort of plain text, which is formatted in a particular way. You have each line of text represents sort of a row of data, and then it is separated by some sort of delimiter. It might be a semicolon, it might be a comma, it might be a tab character, something that's separating individual fields in this table. So this particular file here tells me the age and birth date of Thomas Jefferson and MST3K. Okay, and I could put more rows here, add more ages and birth dates, right? I could even add more columns, right? Put semicolons and something else at the end of each of these, if I so desired. But this is what the data looks like. When it comes into our program, it's just text. A bunch of lines, each one having multiple fields separated by some delimiter. So the basic idea of how we process this is, first, we read all the lines. And we've seen how to do that, right? We do a scanner while there is another line, read a line. And then for each of those lines, we want to split it up into individual fields, right? So we want MST3K to be one, 25 to be another one, 1998-11-26 to be a third piece of this data, so that then we can process it, do whatever it is we want to do with the information that we get. So how do we do that? There's a few basic pieces, right? Let's just review the pieces we've seen before because they're worth reviewing. We make a file object. Okay? File objects are how we read from files. We saw this a week ago Monday, I think, reading from files. Right? If we want to read from a file, we make a new file object, and then we pass it into our scanner. So we make a file object, we make a scanner. And then we treat the scanner like we treat any other scanner. So while it has another line, we read that line. And then we've got a bit of new stuff. So we've read a line of text, and it's just one big string that has some semicolons in it. And what we want to do is split it up into several strings based on semicolons. The easy way to do this is to use the split method that every string has. I can ask any string to split itself based on any delimiter I want, and it will give me back, it will return an array of strings. Okay? So it'll remove all of the semicolons and give me the strings on each side of each one of those semicolons in the original data as an array. Once I have the array, I can do anything I want with it. What I have done with this array is I've said, if it's got stuff in it, then for each one of those things, print it out surrounded by quotes with some weird spacing afterwards. Let's make the spacing afterward a little less weird. Okay? So for each one of those strings, print it out surrounded by quotes with a space after it. And once I've done an entire row, I'll go to a new line. So, to make this work, there's one more piece I have to do, which is actually download my data, which I forgot to do. So let me download my data. So I will save this file into wherever I store my data. Where are we? Here we are. Okay. I save it into the project where my file exists. And if you look in Eclipse, if I then go to this project and refresh it, I should see that that file now exists. Okay. And now when I run this, it doesn't like it because I gave it the wrong file name. I downloaded a file called CSV, so I need to make my file object say that. And now I see that it prints out my data as I requested it do. Okay. So this is the basics of how we read from CSVs. I went through that rather quickly. Questions? Yes?
What happens if it won't accept the file saved it onto?
If what won't accept? If it throws an exception, it probably means you have the wrong file name or you saved it in the wrong folder. Okay? So if the scanner here throws an exception like this, okay, if I get an exception, the message should tell me what went wrong. In this one, it says a file not found exception, which means that my file name is wrong or I didn't save the file to the right folder. It didn't find the file. I think that's the only exception you should be able to see with this code. If you've got a different one, I'd be interested to know what it is. Yeah. So where do you save stuff you want to read with the file? You save it into the project directory. So my project here was called CS1110-001. So it must be in the CS1110-001 folder, which is one directory level higher than the Java files you're writing, because they're all inside the SRC folder. I don't want it in SRC, I just want it in the project directly. Other questions? Yes?
What if the file is in that one that one is still unaccepted?
Then you probably typed the name wrong.
Refresh.
You can also click the name of the project and press F5, or right click and say refresh. And it will show you if it's actually there. If it is there, it should be right on the top level. It shouldn't be inside anything, right? It should be right on the top level. And you should make sure what it spelled is exactly the same as how you spell it when you make your file object. Yes? I'm sorry. Try again. I'm sorry. I'm not making this into words. Try one more time.
The string brackets.
Ah, yes. Okay, so you're asking, what does this line string bracket bracket parts mean? Okay, so we talked about this last Wednesday, an array, but it was just last Wednesday, so let's talk some more about arrays. What does this mean? The general structure of this line we've seen many times before. We have type name, variable name, equals, value. Okay? So the type name in this case is an array, which is what we talked about on Wednesday. What's an array? It's a fixed-sized list of values. What type of values? The string values in this case. So this is a list of strings, a fixed-sized list of strings. The name of the thing that talks about that fixed-sized list of strings is parts. We could have picked a different name. We just picked parts. So we're making a variable that can talk about this list of strings. And then what's the value we're putting in that variable? It's the result of using the split method on our line of text. So every string has a method called split. That method called split will give me back an array of strings caused by splitting my original string around whatever I ask it to split. So that once I run this, I will see it takes my original text, which had a bunch of semicolons in it, and it splits it into pieces, which then my for loop is printing out. Do you want me to say more about that? Nope. Okay. Yes? What does the last line do? What does the last line do? This is system.println? Okay. That goes to the next line. It prints a blank line. Why do I have that? Because inside my for loop, I just have print. So why do I have this for loop at all? Part of the problem, one of the things about arrays that is unpleasant, is that you can't print them out. Or when you try to print them out, they look ugly. So if I were to try to print out the parts array directly, if I were to do a system.out.println parts, which is really what I tried to do, print the array, I would see it gives me this horribly ugly stuff. Okay? Arrays do not print well. So if I want to have something that shows me what's inside the array, I do that with a for loop. I look at each index in the array and print out each one of those individually. So that they're all in the same line, I use a print instead of a println. And then so that I can go to the next line for the next one, I have a println after. I didn't have to do this. This is just a way of visualizing what's in the array. The array exists whether I do this or not. Any other questions? Yes?
So, when you make an array of strings, you made it parse.
Uh-huh.
And then you use the method.length.
Uh-huh.
Is that returning like the length of the string inside the individual array or the length of the array?
It's the length of the array.
Okay.
So anytime we see something after a dot, you can think of it as talking to whatever's on the left side of the dot. So what is the length of parts? Well, parts is an array, so it's the length of the array. If I had done line.length, that would be the length of the text. Right? He'll talk to whatever's in front of the dot. So when I ask the length of an array, I get back the number of individual things in the array. In this case, number of strings in the array. Which, for about this particular input, is 3 in every case. Right? Which is why I'm seeing 3 things printed out between quotes for each of these. Other questions? Okay, let's talk about some things we could do with this. We don't have to split on a semicolon. We could, for example, split on the character T. Java doesn't care what we split on. String doesn't care what we split on. It'll just split the string using whatever we say is the delimiter as a delimiter. So you see, if we split on T, age semi ID semicolon age semicolon birthday turns into ID semicolon age semicolon bur and hooday. The T has gone away and is split it into 2 strings. And we actually see it the other lines, you have the same thing, right? MST3K, the T is a delimiter. TJ1A, the T is a delimiter. In fact, in this one, we even say there is nothing in front of it. So the first string in our array is an empty string. It still says there was a delimiter, so there must have been something before. It was an empty column. An empty string comes back. And we can pick whatever delimiter we want. There doesn't have to be the same number of things in every line, right? So I pick space. The last line is the only one that has more than one thing in it. So because of my if statement, it's the only one that gets printed out. But I can pick whatever delimiter I want to split my string up. And it will do what I ask. It'll split it up. Another thing to note is these ages, even though they are integers, are being stored inside Java as strings. When you split a string, you always get an array of strings. We'll talk in just a moment about how we could turn those into integers if we wanted to do something interesting with them. Okay, that's what I planned to say about this file. Any other questions about this idea of reading CSVs before we look at another example? Yes?
What if we keep trying to run the program and it tells us that the editor does not contain a main type, you know, our main type?
If it says you don't have a main type, that means one of two things. It either means you don't have public static void main string bracket bracket args inside a public class, or it means that you're running the wrong thing. So you can try right-clicking, picking run as Java application in the program, and it might switch what your run configuration is. If neither of those work, hopefully Sal will be back in a moment and can look at your computer. Another question, yes?
Could you just explain one more time the string bracket bracket parts is in the line splits? And how exactly does that work?
How does that work? All right, so we saw this before. Let's go look at how we saw it before. Okay, when we were talking about arrays here, we saw this piece of code. Right, what did this mean? We said we have an int bracket bracket x, meaning x stores an array of integers. Just like if we had said int x, it'd be x stores an int. Int bracket bracket x means x stores an array of ints. And then we set it equal to some value, which in this case was a new array of seven things. This same structure is happening in CSV. I'm making an array of strings, I'm naming it parts, and I'm putting inside of it, instead of a new array, I'm putting whatever array the string line is giving back when I ask it to split itself. So the string line is actually creating the array inside its split method. It's doing all that work. I'm taking what it gives back and storing it in this variable that I decided to make. Do you want me to say more about any piece of that?
That makes sense.
Okay. If the array part is a little fuzzy, I would encourage you to go back and look over what we did on Wednesday last week, where we talked about this. Yes? Tries and catches? I would not add try and catch. So if you add try and catch, then you mean when something goes wrong, ignore it as if it didn't go wrong, and that's almost never the right thing to do. All right, so hopefully at some point, Sam's helping somebody right now, right? Okay. So try catch is the alternative to throws, okay? Throws means if the file doesn't exist, tell me it doesn't exist, blow up, stop running. I could also do a try catch, which would mean if the file doesn't exist, just keep running anyway. Just keep running anyway is kind of a strange thing to do. So if you have a try catch, you can get rid of it and add a throws exception up to your header line, and that should at least let it run. It may still say the file doesn't exist, but it should at least run. Yes? Good question. Exceptions aren't really a major topic in this course. You'll talk a lot more about them in 2110. But briefly, what's an exception? You can think of an exception as what is how Java models some part of your code freaking out. Okay? So if I say make a scanner for this file and the file doesn't exist, the scanner constructor is going to freak out. It's going to lose its cool and yell, and everything is going to go wrong. In Java speak, it's going to throw an exception. There's lots of things that can go wrong. Divide by zero can go wrong, right? You can go off the edge of an array. Java sort of separates out these kinds of ways that your programmer freak out into exceptions that you have to explicitly handle and exceptions you can just sort of ignore. And a file not being there is one they say you must handle. And we're saying, when you say throws exception, what we're saying is, if my program freaks out, I'm going to freak out too. I'm not going to handle it. I'm not going to calm it down. I'm not going to do anything sane. If it blows up, I'm blowing up. And so we explicitly say this thing might blow up in arbitrarily bad ways because we're blowing up anytime anybody else blows up. So we have to have that anytime we're dealing with files, we're dealing with web pages. Those are the main two. There are a few other things that are sort of, you have to explicitly say we might freak out. Do you want me to say more about that? Did I answer your question? It did. Okay. Other questions? Before we move on to a slightly different example. All right. There's another example on the website, on the lecture notes. It does the same thing, essentially, except it uses a URL object. So let's talk about this idea a bit. We've seen that you can read from a keyboard by making a scanner read from a keyboard. You read from a file by making a scanner that reads from a file. You can also read from a web page by making a URL object and putting that into your scanner. So you read from the web page. Web pages act just like files and keyboards once we put a scanner around them. And so just like for reading a file, we had to make a file object and then put that into the scanner. If we're reading from a web page, we have to make a URL object and put that into the scanner. There's one piece of magic you have to do when you put a URL into a scanner. You have to call this method OpenStream. It's an odd name, but what this means is actually go to the internet and see if we can find this URL. It's unclear to me why they decided this needed to be explicit, why you had to say that explicitly. It probably has something to do with the fact that going to the internet costs a lot. It takes a long time. Sometimes, you know, half a second, where everything else happens in milliseconds. But one way or another, to make a scanner out of a URL, out of a web page, you have to manually make the URL, and then you have to open the stream when you pass it into the scanner. Once you have done those two steps, it acts like any other scanner. And so you can read from it just the way you'd read from a user, just the way you'd read from a file. Okay? So I have here an explicit URL that describes a file that is on our class website. It is a CSV file. And I'm going to do various things with it. Before I do all of these pieces, let me actually comment out a few of these little bits. Let's simplify this a bit. Okay? Let's just start by simply printing out the lines. So I make a scanner. Well, it has another line. I read the line and print out the line. I run this, and I see that this file, this website that I'm reading, the first line says prime, semicolon, which one, semicolon squared. The next line is 214, then 329, then 5325, and so on. Just some random data that I put together so we could talk about how you process data. And so I can read it from the website and print it out, just like I could read it from a file and print it out, just like I could read it from the user and print it out. I make the scanner, use the scanner. Okay? So, if I want to use this data, there's a few little bits and pieces that I have to do. The first thing I have to do is I have to recognize that first line of text, first line of the file, isn't really data. It's describing data, but it isn't actually the data I want. Okay? If I wanted to find the average of the values in this file, for example, I couldn't do it if I had a string, because I can't find the average of a string. So one of the things I have here is this reader.next line. Before the loop begins, I read one line of text. I don't do anything with it. This is called burning the line. This is the technical phrase for it. You burn the stuff you don't like. You burn input. Okay? So if I burn a line before I begin, then I will see that we start with the first line with real data. In general, if you wanted to read a particular line of a file, you would burn the lines before it, then read the line. Right? Here I'm burning one line and reading everything else, but if I wanted to pull out just a particular line, I could use that technique as well. So I burn the line. Okay, I read a line and print out a line. Now this line is a line of CSV, so I'm going to split it. And it looks like the delimiter here, the thing that separates one field from another, is a semicolon. So I'm going to split it based on the semicolon, like we did before, and get an array of strings back. It will always give me an array of strings. It will not give me an array of ints, even though all of these values are ints. Okay? Because the split method always returns an array of strings. And if I wanted to do something with these, I would need to turn them from strings into numbers. Because until they're numbers, I can't do anything with them. So that's what the rest of this was doing. In particular, this line of code right here, integer.parseInt. Turning a string into a number is not hard. You've done most of the work already, right? You find a character, you figure out its numeric value, you use some sort of multiplying and adding to turn it into a big number. It's not hard, but it's tedious. So somebody else wrote down the method. They called it parseInt and put it in the integer class. So if at some point you have a file that has strings, you want to turn the strings into numbers, integer.parseInt is a method that takes a string version of a number and produces an integer version of that number instead. There is also a double.parseDouble that you can use as well. Do you have a question? No? Okay. And then once I have the number, I can do whatever I want with it. So I have this piece of code. Questions about this piece of code for me? Yes?
So it's only adding the numbers in the first column, right?
Why do you say that?
Because you're doing parts bracket 0.
Yes. Parts bracket 0 means what? It means the first part. And the first part in this file is the first column. So therefore, what does that mean that sum is? Yes, it is the sum of the values in the first column. The sum of the first 8 prime numbers. Anybody happen to know the sum of the first 8 prime numbers? Let's find out. 77. Great. Okay. So this is the basic idea when you look at the homework and you look at a lot of data analysis. This is the basic idea of what you're doing. You got some basic code that reads the data, figures out what pieces are which, and then you do something with the part you care about, right? So I might want to know the sum of the prime numbers it lists. I might want to know the average value, so I might also count how many I found. I might want to know what, well, some relationship between the squares and something. So I might actually want to deal with 2 of these columns or even 3 of these columns at a time. But usually when we're dealing with data, it looks kind of like this. Read a line, split it out, take the pieces we're interested in, do something with it, comparing them to the other pieces. Questions? Yes?
Why can't we name our class URL?
Why can't we name the class up here URL? Good question. Let's try it. Wah! All right. Why does it not like this? If I name my class URL, I get all kinds of problems. And all these problems are caused by what's called name collision. I have my class URL, and I also have the built-in class URL, and I don't know which one you're talking about. And so I get errors all over the place. I get an error for the import, I get an error for the new, I get an error when I define the class, because there's multiple versions of the same class. Some of you will be tempted to make classes that have the same name as something that's already built in. This is always a bad idea. Okay? If you start doing that, you want to rename things to be, for example, URL example, which is not a name that's built in. Okay? And away you go. You can't make a class named scanner. You shouldn't make a class named math or random or system or any of these other things that we use. If you do, arbitrary things will break. Sometimes you get error messages. Sometimes things will just sort of silently break. Yes?
What is the sum?
It is what 2 plus 3 plus 5 plus 7, etc., until we get to the end of the file, which happens to be 77. Why is it that? Because we said the sum starts out at 0, and then we keep adding the parsed version of the first field. And that was what was in the first field. Other questions? Yes?
So is everything divided by a semicolon in different parts?
Yes. Question is everything divided by a semicolon in a different part? Yes, it is. Because we decided to split our lines on semicolons, semicolons separate out the different parts of our file. If we had decided to split our file on something else, then that something else would be separating the pieces. Okay? So let's see if we could actually do that. I can't do it with the web page. Oh, yeah. Actually, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens if I give it a different web page. How about I just give it... how about the department web page? Okay? Let's suppose I read a web page that is not, in fact, a CSV file. Like this CS department web page, which is not, in fact, a CSV file. Shocking as that may be to you. Okay? And I look at this file, what it outputs, and I see it's got all kinds of random stuff. And then at some point it says, oh, I can't turn it into a number. Okay? And what happened here? It read this line of text. It said, oh, there's a semicolon, so that's my first field that I have highlighted right there. And then it tried to turn that first field into a number and failed to do it. You can read any web page you want using a URL object, and you will get back what's on there. But most web pages that exist in the world are defined in a language called HTML, which is a special language designed to describe how to draw web pages on a screen. It's not really designed for humans to read. And so while you can understand pieces of it, right? I can sort of see that the title of my page has this title. It's quite a long title. There's other pieces of it that don't make a lot of sense. So part of the trick, if you're going to be reading a web page, is to know how the web page was formatted. The only reason I could read the other web page is because I knew what that file contained in advance. I could have chosen to split on something else. Let's suppose I split on the digit 1. Okay? If I split on the digit 1, I'll have basically the same problem, which is that when I split on digit 1, the first row there turns into 2 semicolon and semicolon 4, and we can't turn 2 semicolon into an int, right? If I split on semicolon 1, then it would work a couple of times, but that would stop as well, right? Eventually, this would not work, okay? It gets most of these just fine. It gets the 2, but when it gets down to the end, we split on something that doesn't make sense, and it blows up. So you can split anything you want, but usually you want to split on what the file is defined based on. Otherwise, it doesn't make much sense. Other questions? Yes?
How would you go about making a string of all of the number values, like down each line, make it one big array?
One big array or one big string?
One big string.
All right, so you want to make a string that represents the entire file? All right, how would I do that? Well, I need to have a string. Okay, I'm going to need it to change as I loop, so it has to be defined before I loop. I'll call it big string. What should the big string be equal to before I've looked at any lines of the file? Anyone? If there's nothing in my file, what's my big string going to be? It's going to be nothing. Right? There's no string before I begin. And then if one thing I can do is I could just say big string plus equals line. You remember plus, when applied to two strings, makes a bigger string? So I can just keep changing the string to a bigger, bigger string by adding all the lines up together. And then I can print out the big string at the end. And when I run this, I will see that the big string is indeed all of those numbers smashed together. This may seem weird. I'm not sure exactly why you asked it, but there actually is a reason to do this sometimes. When you're reading a web page, you're reading a web page that somebody else is sending to you over a network, and it costs them some non-trivial amount of money to send it to you. If I wanted to read a page multiple times in order to figure something out, and I kept reloading the web page over and over again, then that would cost them. It'd be sort of impolite. They probably wouldn't stop me from doing it unless I did it several thousand times in a few seconds. But it is sort of rude to keep reading the same page over and over again because they have to pay for the bandwidth to send it to me. So sometimes it is correct to take your web page and sort of read it all into a variable so that you can handle it later on your own. Sometimes that's the right thing to do. It's a pretty unusual thing to do. A couple of the homework pieces, I suggest ways of managing to do everything you need to do in one pass through the data, because it's rude to go multiple times. And also because it takes time, and my grading server has a time limit on all of your programs. But in general, you do want to do it once, and you can save it as a string if you want. You could also write it out to a file, so you have a local copy. There's various things you can do there. Did I actually answer the question as asked? Yes. Other questions? Okay, let's briefly go back to the homework now that we've seen this and talk about what it does. So let's talk about the first piece here, biggest department. The first thing you'll notice is we give you these URLs, okay? And you can make a URL by taking this first piece and adding any department identifier at the end of it you want. Professor Sheriff has done the work of making sure that they all work, okay? So as you're going through your program, you'll notice that, for example, for this first one here, where I want to know the biggest department, the user types in two department IDs. Okay? Two department IDs come in, and then what do you want to do with them? You want to use CS, add it to this front part to make a URL, and then you can open up that URL and read the CSV it contains. Let's actually look at that CSV. Okay, so this is a URL, so that means I ought to be able to open it in my web browser. And here it is. All the information about the CS department. Web pages will naturally format kind of strange. Under the hood, this is what Java will see. Okay, separated out like this. All kinds of fun information like the GPS coordinates of the department offices. Things that you just like, really? But it's all there, okay? Actually, I think this is the GPS coordinates of the room in which we meet. Yes. That's at least what it's supposed to be. So we can see that right now, because we are here in this section right here, so we can see that this is the GPS coordinates of this room, right? If you want that information, it's there. If I had typed a different URL, sorry, that's a little small, I realize most of you couldn't see that, okay? So you have all these different columns, you know, the course and its number and the section number and the title and who teaches it and on and on. And you can do that with any department you want. So somebody give me a department ID.
BME.
Here we are. It turns out there aren't very many BME classes compared to some other schools, right? We've just got these. And here they all are. We've got all that information. You can find the GPS coordinates of their classrooms as well. Okay? So what you're going to do is you're doing the homework. You're going to let them type those endings. You're going to stick them onto the beginning of the URL and use that to find the CSV file you're going to read. And then you're going to figure out whatever you need to figure out with it. And then there's this list of what every one of those columns means. Okay, what department, what course, what section, what's the title of the course, who teaches it, what type of class is it, is it a lecture, is it a lab? When does it start, when does it stop, what day of the week, okay? Or sorry, how many credit hours is it? What days of the week is it offered? So these will all be true or false. Times, locations, how many people are in the class, how many people are allowed to be in the class. Okay, so you could get this information and compute whatever you need to compute based on it. I would strongly encourage you to actually try doing some of this before you come to class on Friday, so that when you come to class on Friday, you can ask any questions you might have about how this works. Okay, at this point, I want to switch and talk a little bit about the exam, unless people have other questions about the CSV right now. Okay, and let me go to Colab, to our course, to the resources, to the exams folder, to the exam key, and let's talk about this key. Okay, so I'm just briefly going to walk over what you're going to find. Page one, you had to do your name and your ID. You had to bubble in your ID and sign your name. That was worth a few points. In the fill in the blanks, let me just hit a few of those that a lot of people got wrong. What is 9 divided by 10? It's 0. They're both integers. Integer division gives you 0. After we have it division, because of the parentheses here, after the division, we cast it into a 0.0. On this one, though, we do the casting on the 10 before we do the division. So it's 9 divided by 10.0, so that gives us 0.9. So a fair number of people messed up that one. Another one that a fair number of people got wrong was this last one. 1 plus 2 is 3.0 in this case, because we had 1.0. When we add a number, like 3, to a string, like 3, we make a bigger string. In this case, 3.03. Okay? These others of these, and we could talk about them as well, but it just, you have to work one step at a time and figure out what's going on. Any of these people want to ask me about? Okay. Question 2. You can do this in 2 lines of code. Most people did it more like 6. That's fine. Mine are kind of ugly because I put them all in one line. Right? If A is bigger than B, change C. Otherwise, change A. Some random subset of you also changed A in the first case by using plus plus or plus equals. Got points off for that. Most of you did pretty well there. What is wrong with this code? The answer is scope. Int square is defined inside these curly braces, so when the curly braces go away, it no longer exists. So that's the problem, and there's lots of ways to solve it. If you wrote a reasonable way to solve it, that was fine. What's something that differentiates a primitive and non-primitive? There are lots of correct answers. There are even correct answers that aren't on this long list of correct answers. A handful of people said they show up purple in Eclipse. That turns out to be how Eclipse displays them, and was thus not allowed as an answer. But if you said something correct there, you got it. There are 26 letters in the alphabet, so the length of S is 26. Character at index 2, remember A is index 0, B is index 1, so C is index 2. Sorry, yes?
Why isn't the length 25 if you count 0 as A? 0, 1, 2, 3.
Good question. So what's the index of Z is 25, but how many things are there in the string? There are 26. So the length of a string is how many characters there are in it, and there are 26 characters in this string. It is correct that the last index would be 25, and if I wanted to get out Z, I would have to say char at 25. But the length is still 26. How do you print 2 lines of a file? You make a file object, you make a scanner, and you print out 2 lines. If you missed some pieces of this, you got points off, as noted in the right margin there. This was a fun one. All right, so let's follow through this code does. I starts out at 1, J starts out at 0. Is I equal to J? No. Is I 1 or J 1? Yes, I is 1, so we print AC. Then we go back around, that's all of the ifs else's, so we go back around to the 4. J becomes 1, now I is 1, J is 1. Is I equal to J? Yes, it is. Is I mod 2 equal to 0? I mod 2 and 1 mod 2 is 1, it is not equal to 0. So we come down to the else here, we do B. So far we've got CB. We come back around, J becomes 2. I is 1, J is 2, they are not the same. I is 1 or J is 1, I is 1, so it doesn't matter that J isn't, we still come in and we do C. We are now done with the inner loop, right? J goes up to 3, it's not less than 3. So we print a new line, which is why there is a new line here. On the next line, I now is 2, J is 0. 2 is not equal to 0. Neither of them are equal to 1. 2 times 0 is less than 2. So we print out D. J becomes 1. I is 2, J is 1, they're not the same. I is not equal to 1, but J is, so we print out a C in the middle place. A. Then J becomes 2. I is 2, J is 2, they are the same. I mod 2 is equal to 0 because it's 2, so we get an A. J becomes 3, that's too big for the loop. We come back around. I is now 3, J is 0, and we do it all again, just one step at a time. Okay? Questions? All right, bits bits of code, the int I equals I plus 4 had to be after the println. That was the most common mistake here. And then the coding question, common things people did wrong. You have to ask for the integers inside the loop, not outside. You needed to check the bottom bounds as well as the top. A lot of people didn't do that. Most people got the hit and miss fairly correct. So that's out there. You can see the grading rubric. Hopefully later today or tomorrow I'll get it so you can actually look at your exams and tell us if we graded it wrong. I will see you all on Friday.